I'm Hugh Hewitt, live from Paris. Radio blogger is with me, Dwayne, and in Texas, Ed Morrissey is standing by. Should we crash and burn? I'm joined by former Secretary of State, former head of the CIA, former member of the House of Representatives, now the president of CavPAC.com, Secretary Mike Pompeo. Mr. Pompeo, welcome back. Good to talk to you, Mr. Secretary.
Hugh, it's great to be with you this morning. Hope you're having a great time in France.
We've actually had a gorgeous week. I know when you're the Secretary of State, you really don't get to enjoy the cities you visit, do you?
No, not much. It's mostly work, but it's always great to be there representing America wherever you're traveling.
Well, I want to get to the Russia war in a second, but first, I saw yesterday, even in my remove in Paris, that you have endorsed David McCormick, probably in a decisive move in the Pennsylvania Senate race. And David's been on the show a lot. I stay neutral in these. Why did Mike Pompeo say we're going in with David McCormick?
In every race I've supported someone out of CavPAC, Hugh, it's been because I thought they'd be the best leader for America. In this case, I'm confident that's Dave. He'll be great for the people of Pennsylvania, too. He's really battle-tested. He's been through so much, right? I knew him almost 40 years ago when we were cadets at West Point. He was a year behind me. So I've known him a long time. I know his color. I know his character. I know the nature of who he is. I know how hard he'll work and what a leader he'll become. Those are the reasons I wanted to get out there, help Dave. I think he'll be great for the people of Pennsylvania, and I know that he'll serve America in a way that will make every one of us proud.
That makes a lot of sense. I did not know you were close to each other at West Point. That tells me a lot. I thought you were a tank guy, weren't you, Mr. Secretary? And he's an airborne, so I didn't know that the...
I was a tank guy. He was an 82nd airborne guy. But, you know, we needed them, and they really needed us.
Okay, let me go to the very darkest story. 9,000 bodies, mass grave outside of Mariupol. What is your advice to the Biden administration about what to do about this other than confirm it and tell us about it?
Well, those are both very important. It is horrific to see what's taking place in places like Bucha and Mariupol and all across Ukraine, the horrific pictures that we know to be true are so deeply disturbing. It's why deterrence matters. It's why you needed to stop this thing before it ever took place. Today the mission set is to continue to do everything you can to highlight these atrocities so the world can see what's really taking place, so disinformation doesn't flood the space from the Russians. Second, provide the tools that the Ukrainians ask for. You know, this is something we've talked about a couple weeks back. We've been slow and late and small in delivery of those weapon systems, and importantly, the intelligence support that they need to actually be in the right place at the right time with the right weapon system. We could do it. We have the capability to do it, and it is not only a moral imperative, but as I think we can all see now, it really matters to the United States. What happens in Kyiv doesn't stay there. It comes to our shores. Our food, lots of things are going to be more expensive, more difficult to come by as a result of the instability now, not only in Ukraine, but throughout Europe.
Ed Morrissey.
Secretary, I want to ask you about the lesson that we are getting now about the United Nations and multilateral organizations, including NATO, right? Because I think NATO has been actually performing pretty well in this crisis, but the United Nations is standing by while a genocide is taking place. They're standing by with the genocide in China as well. Whereas NATO, which is a little bit more aligned to a specific vision and a specific type of governance, seems to be more focused, more ascendant, and more responsive to these atrocities. Is this really the end of the United Nations as any sort of moral force? And frankly, has it ever really served in that capacity?
Ed, this is a really important conversation. The Trump administration was accused of not liking these multilateral organizations. The truth is, it wasn't about liking them or not liking them. It was about, are they fit for purpose? Do they serve the intended mission statement for which they were brought together? Are we just wasting our energy, time, and money, and frankly, fooling ourselves and people all across the world? I think the UN, for a long time, has been an organization incapable of actually dealing with the things it's been tasked to deal with. I saw it on the China issue, right? When you can't call out the Chinese Communist Party for what's taking place there, or when the Wuhan virus is unleashed from the world from that place, and the Secretary General of the UN says, you know, I'm not going to get involved in this. I think it's just fundamentally broken, and we've seen that here too. We've seen dozens of nations abstain from deciding which side of this fight to be on at the UN, and then even the UN Security Council itself, right? Russia, a member, China, a member, even the Security Council itself has demonstrated its inability to deal with what is fundamentally a problem that looks and feels a lot like the very reason it was created, right? It followed from World War II. We now have the Russia attacking a European nation. It is broken, and I think our continued involvement there ought to be reconsidered in a very, very serious way. We got out of the UN Human Rights Council. I think now our money going there is really questionable, Ed.
Secretary Pompeo, you have the advantage of everyone over everyone else talking about the war, of having actually dealt with Putin, dealt a lot with Lavrov, their foreign minister. You've dealt with Macron. You've dealt, I think, with the German foreign minister, who I think was the foreign minister under Angela Merkel. As you assess everybody doing what they're doing, who has surprised you? Who has disappointed you? And what changes have you seen in the 2 years since you left Foggy Bottom, less than 2 years, in the various actors on the world stage with whom you were in daily contact?
You know, I highlight too, Hugh. I think we got to give President Zelensky an enormous amount of credit. Right, we had President Ghani faced with a similar situation, cut and ran, and the political apparatus and the military fell. Zelensky said, "Nope, don't give me weapons. Or don't give me a ride out of the country, give me weapons." And he has held that team together in a way that I think many would not have predicted. A second, I'd want to talk about Chancellor Scholz. He was, in fact, the Treasury Minister, the Finance Minister, when I was a Secretary of State. I dealt with him a fair amount on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline issue, trying to convince him that this day would come, that the Russians would use energy against the Ukrainians, against the Germans, in a way that would harm the people of Germany. Pushed and shoved, he's now gotten to a better place. I hope that when this moment, when this crisis passes, when the peak of this moment passes, that Chancellor Scholz will come to understand that windmills and sunshine are fun and interesting, but they're not going to do the things we need to do to keep our people safe. They need to get an energy policy that makes sense, and it needs to be supported by an American energy policy that helps them get to the right place. We can deliver them the natural gas and fuel that they need. I hope that the Greens and Scholz inside of Germany will come to see that and build on it in the years ahead.
Secretary Pompeo, Vladimir Putin has been hinting at the use of nuclear weapons. He's been rattling that cage now for several weeks based on the fact that it looks like he's facing humiliation in a large part of Ukraine. There's a lot of warnings about that. President Trump's national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, wrote a really interesting piece in The Wall Street Journal about what the American response should be in this case, preemptively as well as potentially post-use. What is your perspective on how best to deter Vladimir Putin from unleashing tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine?
The most important thing we can do is, and one of the things that Ambassador O'Brien highlighted, was that we have to be very clear about the things that we will do, and we need to make damn sure that we are actually prepared to do the things we tell Vladimir Putin that we're going to do.
Right.
So that clarity, that transparency, that communication is absolutely central, so that Vladimir Putin can put that into his thought process and his cost benefit analysis when he's considering whether that's something he actually wants to do, if it's in his best interest. This is the cold hearted, thuggish Vladimir Putin that will do simple math to decide if what makes sense for him. And so Ambassador O'Brien proposed a number of things, not all of which were in Europe, right? He talked about things we could do to the Russians where we're side by side with them in the Middle East and Syria. There are many tools that are at our disposal. The Biden administration should work, develop a plan, a strategy, and then we should clearly communicate that to Vladimir Putin directly so that he knows what the American response will be. And if he should make such a mistake, if he should do something so dangerous, so abhorrent as to use a tactical nuclear weapon against civilian populations or against the military in Ukraine, we should execute the plan that we told him we were going to execute, jot and tittle, and immediately. No discussion, no meetings of the National Security Council. Decision made, execution mode.
Boy, I hope Tony Blinken hears that, Mr. Secretary. Let me move to another part of the world. In Shanghai, 25 million people are starving. And if anyone doubted, and you never did, the ruthlessness of President Xi and his colleagues in the CCP, it's on full display now. Do you think they may be facing the condition? I'm in France, where a lack of food led to the 1789 revolution. And we saw lack of food in Russia in 1918 lead to revolution. Do you think China is dancing on the edge of a cliff here with what they're doing in Shanghai?
Well, Xi bragged about his COVID policy after having unleashed the virus on millions of people from the Wuhan lab all across the world. And now he's got a real political problem and a food problem inside of his own country because of what is a crazy zero COVID objective. You know, it's different than France. There's a lot more political control. The surveillance state is more powerful. They're willing to use force, significant force, against their own people. I suppose there could be protests, but my guess is that that she is prepared to unleash the power of the domestic surveillance services against anyone who steps out of line. And it could look something more like what we saw in Tiananmen Square than something like you saw in Paris, France. The power of the state there is enormous, and I know that she will make sure that he doesn't have that bad day that you're talking about.
With that in mind, Secretary Pompeo, there's a report out this morning that Republicans are looking to dial back some of the tariffs on China. One of the hallmarks of the Trump administration was its get tough policy with China. Presumably, I would suppose that they're trying to do this as a way to ease inflation. But is this really the time to take the pressure off of China?
This is most certainly not the time. I've seen that reporting too. Look, it could be that there's a tariff or two that's in the wrong place at the wrong spot. I suppose that's possible. I don't know exactly what they're thinking about. But if the idea is to either reduce inflation at home, that's silly. It won't accomplish the mission set. There's no way that what they're contemplating can solve the problems that have been created by the Fed and now by terrible policies here domestically by the Biden administration. They're not going to solve the inflation problem with this. And second, the timing is really terrible to send a message to Xi Jinping, who has clearly sided with Vladimir Putin, and to create more wealth for Xi Jinping that he can ultimately provide and provide support and underwrite Vladimir Putin in this war. The timing would be terrible. The messaging would be terrible. And what Xi Jinping would come to understand about American leadership would put Taiwan and the rest of the Southeast Asian region at real risk as well, Ed.
Last question, Mr. Secretary. The Republican National Committee, led by Ron McDaniel, said we're not doing the Commission on Presidential Debates. That might have real-world implications for you within the year if you decide to seek the presidency. What did you make of the RNC's decision? I think the Commission on Presidential Debates probably will try and put it on CNN Plus, but what does Mike Pompeo think about?
Yes, exactly. Or maybe on Disney. I think in the end, Hugh, this was the right decision. The commission had lost its way. I've seen the debates these last two or three cycles. Save for Hugh Hewitt getting candidates on stage, I haven't seen a good moderator that was straight up asking serious questions. These are important times, serious times, Hugh. We ought to hold debates that are serious and thoughtful, give the candidates a chance to say the things that they intend to do so that we can hold them accountable when the time comes. The Commission on Presidential Debates said, not been able to deliver that, and I think it'll be great to find campaigns and candidates that can now make good decisions about how to present the issues to the American people in a way that will actually reflect well on our country and have a really good competitive campaign as well.
Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, thanks for joining Ed Morrissey and me this morning. I appreciate it greatly. Hang in there. Keep going with CavPack.com. America, if you want to support great candidates, go to CavPack.com and support Mike Pompeo. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
You have
Thank you.